is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am one of your hosts today, Ursula Rudenberg, here with my co-host, Gail Seiler.
Welcome to Local Talk. Thanks for listening in.
A federal appeals panel has maintained the freeze on President Trump's controversial immigration order, meaning previously barred refugees and citizens from seven majority Muslim countries can continue entering the United States. According to the Washington Post, in a unanimous 29-page opinion, three judges of the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit flatly rejected the government's argument that suspension of the order should be lifted immediately for national security reasons, and they forcefully asserted their ability to serve as a check on the president's power. The judges wrote that any suggestion that they could not, quote, runs contrary to the fundamental structure of our constitutional democracy.
Yesterday, a solidarity march across Iowa State University's campus was held to show support for immigrants, refugees, racial minority groups, and other people who feel targeted by President Donald Trump. We're going to bring you some of the voices that were heard there a little later in the show.
We'll also be hearing about a group of area residents who are preparing support for refugees here in Ames and advertising this in their own way, yard signs. We're excited about bringing all these voices to you here on Local Talk. We'll start out this hour by looking at another way the ISU community is embracing diversity on campus, Iowa State University's newly formed Office of Diversity and Inclusion.
Liz Mendez Shannon is in the new Office of Diversity and Inclusion. She's the Project Director for Hispanic and Latinx Affairs. Welcome, Dr. Liz, as I believe many students on campus call you.
Thank you. Well, I'm excited.
Great. And do you want to introduce your colleagues that are with you today?
Sure. Oh, they can actually introduce themselves.
Okay.
This is Tabitha Cruz. I serve as Program Coordinator in the Office of Multicultural Student Affairs.
And I'm Elizabeth Martinez-Podolsky. I work with the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences as our Multicultural Liaison Officer.
Thank you all for being here. Liz, we're going to start with you. You're in the new office, as I mentioned. How and why was this office created?
A couple of years ago, there was a university-wide inventory that took stock of all the diversity work across campus. And out of that came a recommendation to have a chief officer of diversity and inclusion. So the goal was to enhance and increase the efforts that are done across campus with regards to diversity and inclusion. And out of that was our VP, Dr. Reg. And then after that, the two director positions for LGBTQ and for Latinx Affairs.
And you're the Latinx Affairs Director.
Yes, and I like to look at that position more as a generalist because while I may tend to hone in on those issues, it really impacts the university as a whole, and it really impacts all of our students.
Dr. Liz, why does it impact the whole university?
Oftentimes, there might be incidents or issues that cut across all of our groups, not just the Latinx affairs. So as an example, we did a forum, Know Your Rights as an Immigrant. But immigrants can include Latinx, those from Asia, many, many folks. So that's how those issues, they cut across. I think when we start to look at how we can support our students, we need to also acknowledge that we all have to take a part in that because it does affect us all.
And this position is just about a year and a half old, or the whole the whole office.
December.
Yeah. What role do you see yourself carving out within that office?
Well, I'm pretty excited about that, which is why our team is here. When I started, you know, the position is really brand new, and I could be an artist with that position and really utilizing my background as a professor, as a researcher, as a Latina, to see where these needs are and where I can be a support. So because our office doesn't really have like a lane, in other words, it's not specific to a college or a department, we are in support of the whole campus, which makes it overwhelming as well, but also exciting. As I met a lot of amazing individuals across campus, I can see the trends that are going on. And then I start to think, well, how can our office be a support to help in that gap of service? Or can I connect two departments? Can I connect some teams to alleviate what might be going on? We also saw that with the whole immigration ban and how that impacted our campus as well.
This seems like a very timely opportunity for your office to really get going and expand and make a place for itself.
My position began November 1, right before the election. So let's just say in my couple of months there, it feels like a year's work because it's just been so busy, so active. But what that, you know, has done is to help me to be a part of teams, because even though I'm one person in my role, my teams are across the whole campus.
Dr. Liz, you are new at the job. This is a new position. What is the first thing that you did in the position?
What I did was my week there, after loving my new office because it has a beautiful view, is to realize that we needed to put in place support to no matter who won the election. We needed to be more proactive as opposed to, you know, reactive. So we created a forum, a check-in place, a drop-in, if you will, at Beer Chair, where no matter, you know, who won, who became our president, you were welcome to come and have some snacks and have some conversations.
Can you give us an example of what kind of conversations you experienced when that happened?
The reality, yeah. So when it really hit, and I guess I could say a lot of folks that arrived were kind of in shock still. Because the elections really took the whole night, everyone was exhausted as well. So here you have people who are exhausted, the majority really talking about how is this really happening? You know, sort of that shock or numbness, if you will. We had some professors invite their class to the conversation so that those talks would happen in that kind of space. Yeah, what I had envisioned was to have sort of like a debrief and then have action steps, but I was too ambitious. No one was, you know, ready to talk about action. It was just about what's going on and get grounded on what does this really mean.
Deal with the emotions at first.
Yes.
Was what was needed.
Exactly.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we're your hosts, Ursula Rudenberg and Gail Seiler, and we're here with Dr. Liz Mendez-Shannon, Director for Hispanic and Latinx Affairs at ISU's newly formed Office of Diversity and Inclusion, and with her are Elizabeth Martinez-Podolsky, the Multicultural Liaison Officer, or an Undergraduate Retention Specialist in the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, and Tabitha Cruz, Program Coordinator for Retention and Leader of the Multicultural Vision Program. So let's turn to you folks now. What are each of your roles? Elizabeth Martinez-Podolsky,
in the Office of Multicultural Student Affairs, through my role, I provide academic, emotional, social support to the students throughout their 4, 5, 6 years at ISU, and really just providing a space for community for our students and being one big family. I serve as a scholarship coordinator for the Multicultural Vision Program, which awards 100 Iowa residents who are graduating high school seniors who are incoming to Iowa State University. And we award students with a full tuition, 4-year scholarship. All of our students do identify as multicultural. Our scholarship is also a need-based program, so students who are from lower socioeconomic status get to participate in that program.
And with her, Elizabeth Martinez-Podolsky, the Multicultural Liaison Officer and Undergraduate Retention Specialist in the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences.
As the Multicultural Liaison Officer, the MLO for College of Ag and Life Sciences, I work with multicultural students in the Ag and Life Sciences, as well as our LGBT student population, our student veterans, and then we're starting to see a whole new influx of different student pockets, and so I've been kind of extending my role to serve those pockets as well. I provide support, some advocacy, and work on retention efforts, and a lot of professional prep. So our students are incredibly active, taking on lots of different leadership roles, but then also preparing for what comes after graduation. So I'm part of that process as well.
And how do all three offices or similar offices work together across campus?
Yeah, I think one thing, having been here for a couple of years, I noticed that coming into the role within Ag and Life Sciences, we worked closely with the Multicultural Student Affairs Office and some programming. Some of our student populations overlapped, but we also made sure we checked in with each other to provide that support for student organizations, for student groups. And then as the larger number of students, of multicultural students, started to enroll, I saw this university react. So one of those ways was the addition of the Vice President for Diversity and Inclusion Office. And through that role, I think we've had a little more access to provide information to our upper administration on some of the things that our student population needs, as well as some of the great efforts that they're doing, as well as some of the work that we're doing. So having worked together with the MSA office has been great, but having that extra level of support in upper administration has also been really helpful.
When you use the term multicultural, how many of those people are actually international students? Are you speaking about Americans or predominantly international students?
Multicultural at Iowa State is, depending on if you're like running a program or something like that, that can vary. So they could be domestic or international students. Some of our undocumented student pockets as well might need that assistance. And so I see that there's different and multiple students identifying that way. However, for scholarship purposes, for example, the Multicultural Vision Program, you do need to identify as a multicultural domestic student.
We specifically work with domestic students. And our domestic multicultural student population, I believe, is about 12% of our student body. At Iowa State, how we identify multicultural, our students who identify or self-identify as Alaska Native American Indian, Asian Pacific Islander, Black African American, Hispanic Latino, and multiracial and Native Hawaiian.
And you've been at ISU longer than Dr. Liz has. So going back to the idea of, you know, how current events are impacting particularly the multicultural students that you do work with at ISU this year, say, recently, has it been different, and what's been different?
I believe overall there's been a lot of mobilization and activism on behalf of the students, and so a lot of meetings and prep work that has been going into setting up rallies and demonstrations and having conversations as to what else can we do. So I think the students have been more civically engaged through this process, which has been really exciting to see. I think in the days following the election, everyone was just very tired because this has been a year and a half long process in preparing for this moment. And so I think that for some of our students who have, I think, more at stake in this situation, there's been a lot of fear, there's been a lot of sadness. And in the weeks following, I think folks were just trying to recuperate and trying to gain the strength again to go back out there and fight every day.
Anyone else have a thought on that?
Yeah, I really appreciate seeing students get together and demand more from their education. I think student activism is one of the best ways to show, you know, democracy. And so I think our students are being civically engaged and asking bigger questions, at least questions that really challenge us to provide more resources, that provide our instructors to provide more holistic learning and knowledge information. So that part has been really great. Also, within our roles, we provide a lot of emotional and social support. And so some of the things that students have been coming in with have been a little bit different than in the past. And so usually I'm able to connect students to a particular resource, or I'm able to find someone that I can connect them to and know that, you know, that's taken care of. But sometimes when someone's coming in and saying, I'm scared as an LGBT student to walk certain areas, or, you know, I don't know if my parents are going to be deported. And that part really sinks into me because how can I provide that support? How can I provide a resource or assurance to let them know that things are going to be okay? And those are the kinds of things that have kind of presented new ideas and challenges, as well as new levels of challenge and support from our staff across campus.
I hear you saying that there are questions about safety.
Mm-hmm.
What other bigger questions do you hear the students asking?
Will the university advocate for us when it comes to providing safety from, especially immigration right now is a big topic, a conversation. But our students are not just fearing for themselves. I mean, we do have an undocumented student population on campus, but we also have people who are connected to families that might be affected by some of these policies.
Can you explain what you mean about undocumented student population?
Sure. So we have a larger, I feel like, growing pocket of students coming into campus, students that may have been brought to this country when they were younger by their parents, or have been brought here recently, depending on their personal story, but students who weren't born in the United States, per se.
Would these be then students who have DACA designation?
So there are two categories, undocumented students and then our documented students. Undocumented students are protected through the DACA policies, and so they have to do every two years a renewal process to maintain that.
And so there's probably some concern now whether that's going to continue or be discontinued.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now with the state legislature, as well as what's going on at the national level, but particularly in the state, are you following particular bills and things going on in the state legislature, and are students involved in that?
A lot of my community contacts have been reaching out to their local legislators.
House Bill 67.
It is.
For the state of Iowa.
This one particularly has been passed to try to alleviate the DACA program. And not only are they doing that, but those that are trying to pass the bill are trying to get universities to share DACA students' information with the federal government. And that's where it becomes kind of, I mean, aside from having FERPA laws and protecting our students' information, because this bill is opening that up, it puts a lot of students' safety at risk for sure.
A lot of community members have been, and students have been organizing to go to the Capitol, speak with legislators, speak with the senators, speak with local representatives within their communities, and ask for them to not support the bill.
Okay, so students are kind of mobilizing to have input on that.
Yes, and so the bill is about different agencies and departments would have to be mandatory reporters and follow some of the anti-immigration laws from the federal government. So some of the stuff that is currently happening with our federal administration would then be represented in the state level.
I think, too, that we have to acknowledge that that's not an easy task. And even though we have a professional identity, we are a person, and we have our own interests and our own values. And what I find in our work now, that's always on the forefront, like how can I perform my position while still being very passionate about what I believe in and what is right or wrong? So it's definitely not an easy task.
Mm-hmm. So it's a balancing act kind of for you on a personal and professional level.
And as teams in the trenches, you have to support each other. I think even now more strongly, which is why I felt that it was important for all of us to be on your show today.
Can you give an example of a challenging situation that you've encountered in the job?
Sure, Ursula. Thank you. I think that what I have seen in my identity as a Latina, the first one in my family to finish some of the educational steps, is how do I bring my identity into my role and still represent the job I have to do. So that's been a constant balancing act, because, you know, you can't just go to work and hug everyone and say it's going to be okay, but you can speak in ways that are strong and supportive and be a leader in those initiatives.
What kind of things can you say to people to be strong and supportive?
Yeah.
What do you find works?
Really, it's not like a script. It really comes out of your heart and looking at my teams and really admiring, you know, their strength. So admiring, you know, their strength, it feeds me. it's kind of like a back and forth, that energy that goes, you know, back and forth.
I think the narratives often shared about people of underrepresented populations have been shared usually not by us. So I find that validation is really important with working with students of underrepresented populations, reminding them that they have a lot of the applicable experiences to make them successful. For example, I have some students come in and say, I'm not sure I have the professional job experience. I haven't done an internship or studied abroad or have those experiences. And I'm like, but you help your father run his business. Mm-hmm. Like, let's talk about how those skills are transferable. Or, you know, you translate for your parents. Like, that's a skill. And so just kind of reminding them that they have experiences that are incredibly applicable and valuable and needed, I think, in our upcoming society.
You work in the agriculture department, so you presumably do have a number of foreign students who, one of the things I noticed yesterday at the demonstration was how many foreign students are thinking about family members who are outside of the country. Do you, in your office, deal with homesickness very much?
Yeah, I think so. Some of even our domestic students, because our, you know, communities are pretty close knit, even just families being in Marshalltown, Denison, Sioux City, like there's that level of I can't see my family or I can't go home every weekend. And just, you know, the act of being away, I know for Latinx communities, it's that leaving from home and kind of uprooting for a while can really present a lot in you. Challenges and even challenge on values and things like that. So, for our international students especially, I think there's that, you know, I miss my family. And for some, I've heard stories of, you know, this is a really great place to be and I feel very fortunate. Others, almost a little guilty for their family not having the same opportunity.
Sounds like you really have a sense of what's going on with students in these positions. You're feeling their pulse. Do you also feel that, is it part of your job to also then be a channel toward the upper administration to share that and keep them aware of what's kind of going on at ground level?
Yeah, definitely.
There were lots of nods.
Yeah, absolutely. I think having Dr. Liz Amanda Shannon on board with the VPDI office has really provided a new avenue to share information, but also to work together. Since she's gotten here, she's provided a great level of support and opened up her any opportunity to say, you know, we're in this together. And I think that's really important to doing this kind of work. Our students pay attention to that as well. We kind of say they check us, right? Because they're like, well, you know, Tabitha's offering this through her office. What resources can I, you know, seek from you? And so in that way, we definitely have to work together. It's imperative. And if anything, it's also modeling the values that, you know, that we all have, which is our students can't do it alone. You know, we're a community. And so it's great to have us, you know, with some kind of multicultural name in our title, but there's a lot of people across campus doing this work as well, whether it's in the classroom or coming to the university with varied experiences and bringing those and creating programs for students to be a part of. So it's cool to be part of that community for sure.
Well, I think that not only the students, but I think the whole ISU community, I'm a faculty member there, so I can say this as part of that community. We're really thankful, especially at this moment in time, to have so many people like you working together to support all of us and help us all learn how to get through this moment, this historical moment. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Gail Seiler, here with my co-host, Ursula Rudenberg. We've been hearing from Dr. Liz Mendez Shannon, Director for Hispanic and Latinx Affairs in ISU's newly formed Office of Diversity and Inclusion. And we've also had with us Elizabeth Martinez Podolsky, the Multicultural Liaison Officer and Undergrad Retention Specialist in the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences, and also Tabitha Cruz, Program Coordinator for Retention and Leader of the Multicultural Vision Program. Thank you all so much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
El alma y el cuerpo. Thank you.
No bans, no wall. Sanctuary for all. 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 No band, no wall.
All right, thank you everybody. Thanks for coming out in this cold weather and thanks for your support.
And you are listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We are your hosts today, Ursula Rudenberg and Gail Seiler. You just heard music from Bomba Les Estereros from Colombia, followed by a flying segue of sounds from yesterday's Solidarity March across Iowa State University's campus to show support for immigrants, refugees, racial minority groups, and other people who are feeling targeted by President Trump. As you probably know by now, the unanimous 29-page opinion that three judges from the U.S. Court of Appeals of the Ninth Circuit has maintained the freeze on President Trump's controversial immigration order, meaning that the previously barred refugees and citizens from seven majority Muslim countries can continue entering the United States. The judges rejected the government's argument that suspension of the order should be lifted immediately for national security reasons.
These are my brothers and sisters from the same school that are standing here with us in the cold area today to show their solidarity so that, you know, their unity that they are feeling for us, you know, what we're going through. It gives me an encouragement and it gives me a hope, because if they go back to their country, they cannot come back. And they really wanted to finish their schools in the United States, because we believe that the United States is one of the best countries that have best schools. And that's why everybody's coming here.
I care a lot about social injustice, and I'm an aspiring journalist. So I came out, saw the turnout that we had today during one of my classes. I decided in the middle of class to leave said class.
I'm Muslim, and I'm also a black woman. I'm also an immigrant, so that kind of makes it awful. We should just love each other as our own brothers and sisters, because that's all that matters.
My name is Ahmed, and I'm a chemical engineering student. I came from one of the seven countries that's been affected. I was born right before the war began. I have never seen my country. My parents fled into Kenya. So when I came to the United States to go to school, to get a better life, when I got education, I was thinking that I would go back to my country and rebuild my country. But now I cannot go back and see my country again.
I'm from Persia, from Iran. Okay, I have been here 3 months. Okay, my daughter and my wife live in Tehran. They wanted to join me here, but this executive order makes some problem for us.
You're separated from your family.
Mm-hmm. I'm disgusted for this situation.
I am a PhD candidate now, but I accepted a job as a professor at university in California. And I'm supposed to change my visa status to the work visa, and now I'm concerned that can we do it or not. I'm from Iran. We know that this might be a temporary thing, but really frightens us that it could become permanent, and it also profiles us as different people.
Obviously, I don't support the ban. I have a couple of coworkers from Iran that have become really good friends of mine. I do believe that it's a Muslim ban, just out of the blue. I'm encouraged by the people coming together. What I really want to see happen, though, is changes at a national level of both the public's attitude towards many of these people who we really don't have many problems from people immigrating from those countries. They are refugees in every sense of the word, and they have been loyal to us.
I'm from a country which was affected by this rule. Iran or Iran, I don't know how you pronounce it. I hope that people of the U.S. help us to work out this ban and make it less. If the reaction of the U.S. people, it really encouraged me. I mean, I could feel, I mean, this is the U.S., the real U.S. People, they care about each other. And it was really interesting for me and really surprising. I really enjoyed that, to be honest.
Know how important graduation is, right?
After this?
Yeah. So when we graduate, you know that families come over, and that's one of the things in your life. But some of us will be getting their diplomas while there's no families around them. because they cannot come here. Thank you all. We are all Cyclones, and we really appreciate for coming over here. Thank you.
Thank you for coming out to join in solidarity with our brothers and sisters who have been most immediately impacted by this ban. The fight doesn't end here. Keep loving. Keep fighting. Write to your elected officials. Make phone calls. Show up. Show up. If you have signs that you would like to donate to the archives of Parks Library, please donate them. Make sure that activism that's happening on this campus is archived and is kept
right away
and curated so that the next generation of students that come, the university can't say, we didn't know that Islamophobia existed.
This is Local Talk, and those were actually recordings made yesterday at a march and rally in solidarity with students at Iowa State University who feel targeted by President Trump, carrying signs, cheering enthusiastically for every speaker.
You could really get a feel for what was happening. But tell us more about what was really going on at the rally yesterday.
Well, the rally started in at the Union and kind of walked across campus in different parts of the campus. They first went to Curtis Hall and then went from there to where they had some speakers. And then they went to Beer Cheer Hall as the administration building and had more speakers there. And then they walked over to the steps of the library in what's called the Free Speech Zone, and they had more speakers there. And I didn't see the crowd diminishing, even though it was cold.
Mm-hmm.
The crowd seemed to be gathering more and more as it went along, and there were quite a few signs. People seemed to be pretty strong mix between what looked like foreign students, what looked like Iowa State students who were obviously Americans, and then there were some community members and also some children there. So it was a pretty strong mix. There were also some professors there. A number of people gave relatively impassioned speeches. The march and rally was called Hoodies and Hijabs, which is part of a kind of national movement to call demonstrations like these by that name, which conceptually connects violence against African Americans, referring back to the young African American boy Trayvon Martin, who was wearing a hoodie when he was killed, and connecting this violence with violence against Muslims in the United States. I went to the rally. It was a substantial rally. There were somewhere between 100 and 200 people at the rally, despite the bitter cold. And I spoke with Wesley Harris, who is a PhD candidate in the School of Education, and he's also president of the Black Graduate Students Association at Iowa State. He took a little time with me after the rally to, he was the MC kind of at the rally in the part that I was at, but he took time afterwards to help explain a little bit how he helped to instigate this event with Facebook and a series of postings. He also explained to me how very personal this connection between the hoodies and the hijabs is for him.
My father is Muslim. I'm black. He's black as well. It impacts who I am, even though I don't identify as Muslim. I don't practice Islam. I can't separate that from my upbringing and the creation of who I am. I remember when the first World Trade Center bombings happened in the early 90s. I was a kid. I had shame. I had fear. I was fearful of sharing with friends at school and folks in my community that my father is Muslim. I saw the Islamophobia in some of the, teachers, friends, classmates. So it was very real. And then I was a first year college student when 9/11 happened. And I don't want to call it blind patriotism, but this call to action to be united against, Muslim terrorists. And that rhetoric has continued as we see when we talk about terrorism and in the rhetoric of our current administration and in this executive order, it explicitly targets Muslim majority countries and African nations. So the policy in and of itself is xenophobic, is Islamophobic, is anti-black.
How did you feel about today's demonstration?
It was beautiful to look out and see the faces of various hues of skin tone, people with hijabs. Fortunately and unfortunately, I've come to make new friends who are from the seven countries under the ban as we organize this rally and these events. We were pretty specific in our request that we wanted this to be about love, keep loving, keep fighting. You know, those things are oftentimes seen as antithetical. They're not. If you're resisting hatred, you have to resist hatred with love. It doesn't mean that you have to match hate with hate.
That was ISU PhD student Wesley Harris, who was one of the organizers and also clearly has very personal connections to both the issue of Muslims and African Americans from his own family. Dr. Martino Harmon, Senior Vice President of Student Affairs, was also at the rally, and on the steps of the library, he spoke on behalf of the university at the rally.
I stand here today in solidarity to recognize the hurt, the pain, the frustration, the anxiety that has been caused by the recent executive order. I understand the need to be safe, but this action has created an adverse impact that has made our international and Muslim students feel unsafe.
Yeah.
So it's actually the opposite of what we want. So I want to share with you some of the ways in which Iowa State University is trying to support primarily the students as well as the faculty and staff. People have asked about admissions to the university and will this order change admissions? It will not. There will be no admission based on national origin. That is actually discrimination. We cannot do that. I want you to know also that our Legislative Affairs Office and the President's Office has made outreach to the six member offices of the Iowa Congressional Delegation to share the university's concern about the impact of the executive order and the potential consequences on this university environment. We also signed on to a letter on February 3rd that was drafted by the American Council on Education. We signed with 600 universities to express our concerns about President Trump's executive order and the impact on immigration. And that letter was delivered to Homeland Security. Additionally, administrators will work on a case-by-case basis through our International Students and Scholars Office, through many other departments on campus to support students. We do not gather information about citizenship when individuals have to interact with the police. They have no jurisdiction or role enforcing United States immigration laws, and we have no plans whatsoever to change that. We've arranged two events in February that will allow students to hear from immigration attorneys, ask questions, and learn more about their rights that they have. So finally, I want to close with these statements, and this is from me. International and Muslim students contribute to the rich diversity of our campus and community. They are not terrorists. International and Muslim students are here to receive an education to further their careers. They are not terrorists. International and Muslim students have already completed a thorough vetting process to be here. They are not terrorists. And finally, international and Muslim students will be treated with the dignity and respect afforded to all students, and we will not tolerate harassment or intimidation because international and Muslim students need to be safe because they are not terrorists. They are peaceful, productive human beings, and they are part of the Cyclone family. Thank you.
That was Dr. Martino Harmon, Vice President of Student Affairs, speaking yesterday at the demonstration called Hoodies and Hijabs at ISU yesterday. It was a march for solidarity with students who were feeling targeted by the recent immigration ban. Support for immigrants has shown up in a variety of ways around our community. One group of people has been working here since this past summer to prepare Ames as a place that can resettle refugees from foreign lands. It has quickly grown into a group of 70 or more And very soon, Ames residents will start seeing yard signs expressing the philosophy of this group. Here's Local Talk reporter Greta Anderson speaking with Diane Burt.
I'm pleased to speak about our new and growing group to support refugees in Ames.
Tell us how this group got formed.
We have 9 churches who have kind of signed on. They publicly are engaged with us. We have 70 members. Not all of them have come out of a faith tradition. We have agnostics. We have people that just want to get out and help Ames be a community that welcomes refugees.
That's quite a large group for an organization that's only been around a couple months, right?
Our first meeting was in July. We had 8 people attend, and largely people came out of different Amos congregations. I will tell you the way I got involved in this, because I haven't been involved in refugee resettlement in the past. This is new to me. I had 2 friends connected with the Ames United Church of Christ that kind of told me our community is one where we should be settling refugees. So I brought this up at our social justice meeting. They were very supportive. They thought, oh, yes, this is something our church could be engaged in and should be engaged in. We took it to our executive board. They were very supportive. Then we reached out through Amos, because we partner with a lot of community churches through Amos. And we also reached out through an Ames ecumenical group of pastors. We had our first meeting. We had 8 people from about 5 churches in Ames, and that was in July, and we just kept reaching out. And the main mission of our group is to settle refugee families in Ames, to help with this phenomenal crisis we have in the world. And here we have space. We have, you know, welcoming people. Iowa has a long tradition of settling refugees, and we should be settling refugees in Ames.
And this came right at a time when there was a lot of rhetoric in the presidential campaign about refugees, particularly refugees from Syria.
Yes, definitely. And the group would definitely like to have Syrian refugees be the top priority for resettlement in Ames. But we have spoken to the U.S. Committee on Refugees and Immigrants in Des Moines, and they say the first thing we have to do is get Ames approved for settling refugees, because refugees are vetted through the State Department, and then they decide who they're going to send to your community. So I guess we could say that we would love to settle Syrian refugees here. We have all of these resources for settling Syrian refugees, but it will be up to the State Department to decide who they actually send. Our first thing, though, is to get approved, and we need to work with the U.S. Committee on Refugees and Immigrants in Des Moines in order to do that. They're the organization now that's settling refugees in our area. They were particularly thrilled because we went to see them, and I believe it was August. And not long before we went to see them, we had Tim Garten, a city council member and the city manager, go and speak with Carly Ross from the U.S. Committee on Refugees and Immigrants. They were there to speak to her shortly before we went and said, you know, we think that Ames should be approved for this. And she kind of said, start partnering with people in the community. So independently, we went down to speak with her, and she said, yes, we will work to get Ames approved. Now, last year, they were working to get Cedar Rapids approved. So we're up next year, and we'll go through the process this next year. But in the meantime, we have a lot of things we're doing in our group. We're preparing Ames. We know that some people are going to be uncomfortable with the idea of settling refugees here. There's a lot of rhetoric out there. So the first thing that we are doing is working to see that Ames is welcoming for refugees, working to see that we have the resources that are needed, that we have systems for language, because people generally come not speaking English. We have systems for medical. We have housing, which is going to be a tough one in Ames. We don't have a solution yet, but that's going to be a tough one, to have housing, because you need to have housing that people are going to be able to afford. The State Department provides funds. Currently, they provide funds for about 3 months. That isn't a lot of time for people to get to where they can support housing in Ames for a family. So there'll probably be supplements we'll need for that. But again, these are people that want to be independent. They want to be paying their way. So,
and they may be very talented and
they may
have
be
skills.
Very, that's right. They right. may be very talented, but they need to get the language skills. They need to get integrated into our community to be able to use the skills they have.
Are you worried that with the change of leadership at the highest level, that the refugee process might change and that perhaps even be cut off?
I think that the U.S. has a strong and long enough tradition in welcoming refugees and immigrants. that we will overcome.
Any obstacles.
Any obstacles. Yes, we're concerned, but one of our subgroups is an advocacy group that will be writing letters that will be helping us decide, are there times we should get out there on the street and march? Are there, you know, are there things we can do to help advocate for the whole process of settling refugees and helping immigrants in the United States? Our emphasis is local, so we're focusing on preparing aims, but we're also cognizant of what's going on at the national level.
And as part of the laying the groundwork, you have a yard sign campaign.
We had a friend point out the availability of some yard signs that were pretty much perfect for our purpose. They say on them, "One human family, we support refugees and our Muslim neighbors." So we've just been finding out who wants signs in this area, in Ames, and ordering them. And the first order has come in. We have yard signs going up around. We have other groups distributing them now. The League of Women Voters has been finding out who wants signs, so they're developing a list. The Ames Progressive Alliance has set up a link on their website to find out who would like these signs. And essentially, the emphasis is that we are one human family and showing support for refugees and Muslim neighbors.
Well, it sounds like you're very motivated to make this happen and to really step up in the face of a very challenging global situation that the whole world has recognized.
There's one other thing I definitely want to mention, and that's an upcoming meeting that we are planning. April 25th, that is Tuesday, 7:30 p.m., we will have a town hall meeting in the Ames Public Library, where we will be have a panel talking about the issues that community needs to consider in preparing to resettle refugees. We'll have people coming up from the U.S. Committee on Refugees and Immigrants, and we'll have a number of local people that will help us explore what Ames needs to be doing to prepare for settling refugees. So
maybe they'll need to revive that Arabic class at the high school.
Yes, that might be that might be on the agenda. I guess it depends upon where the refugees come from.
I hope that KHOI will be contacted again when that time comes. We'll probably be talking to you about refugees again in April. Thank you so much, Diane Burt of the Ames Interfaith Refugee Alliance.
Thank you.
That was Greta Anderson speaking with Diane Burt of the Ames Interfaith Refugee Alliance. If you'd like to order a yard sign, you can do so on the Ames Progressive Alliance website, and we'll put a link to that on our website. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been one of your hosts, Gail Seiler, together with Ursula Rudenberg. Today we heard from Dr. Liz Mendez-Shannon, Director of Hispanic and Latinx Affairs at ISU, and we also heard from Elizabeth Martinez-Podolsky and Tabitha Cruz, who work with multicultural students at ISU.
And I have been your other host for today, Ursula Rudenberg. We also heard from Wesley Harris and Dr. Martino Harmon, ISU Senior Vice President of Student Affairs, along with various people who attended the Hoodies and Hijab Rally at Iowa State University. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
And remember, local KHOI streams live on our website, and Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m., or you can listen to it online and find links to the information we gave during each program. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. So if you would like to try your hand at reporting or any other aspect of this show, we'll train you. Come and join the Local Talk team.
And as always, remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we will see you again on the radio.